listener production.
On today's episode of Footy Talk, Nick Riewoldt and I share our big takeout from the weekend's footy. Rui gives his thoughts on the pressure surrounding Harley Reid, and we chat Harry Mackay. That's all up next on Footy Talk. This is Footy Talk. It is your place for the latest news, interviews and analysis from the world of AFL. And every Tuesday we set the agenda, we analyse the biggest topics, and I always look forward to introducing my great mate, Nick Riewoldt. Hello, Rue. How's the week been?
Good week, Joey. Thank you very much. Great to have some footy back. Weren't there some cracking games too? Nice to see you. You're multitasking at the moment. You're doing the basketball, you're doing the footy, you're everywhere.
I did. I am in footy mode, but I did cross over and head down to Hobart last night, down to the nest down there. The Tassie Jack Jumpers through to game three, so that's all good and well. But it was a big weekend for footy. We got the four games underway up in the northern states. I got to spend a few days in Sydney and just snuck away from the family for a couple of nights, Rui, which was quite nice. Told Aaron it was work, and it was all good. But my big takeout, or one of the big takeouts from the first weekend of footy, and I'm not going to be one that's going to over-exaggerate too much, but we will dive into a few of the games. But I tell you what I have reckon is going to happen this year. I reckon the key forwards are back. And what I mean by that, Rui, is, you know, it's been 15 years. It's been 15 years since we've had at least five players in a home and away season kick 60-plus goals. You know as well as anybody how much it dried up for the key forwards. So between 2017
years, so what was
2008,
what, so what was
it was the, back in 2008 yeah, right. when we had a whole bunch of players kick 60-plus goals. That was when Roughhead and Franklin and probably yourself were around the mark and all the key forwards. It dried up. So between 2017 and 2022, we're only averaging about two players a season that were kicking 60-plus goals.
It crept low back Coleman up, totals.
Low Coleman totals. It crept back up to four last year. I think this year it'll be up over six or seven players that'll kick 60-plus goals. I'm just looking across the competition, and I'm talking about the King boys that are ready to break out. The familiar names like Cameron and Hawkins and Tex Walker are all still capable of kicking 60. You've now got your Jamaras and Nortons coming through. You've got Mitch Lewis. It's possible Nick Larkey's going to be there. Mitch Lewis at Hawthorn. Oscar Allen could do it at the West Coast Eagles. We know about Mackay and Curnow as well. I just think this is going to be the year. The way the game has evolved, and we've now got a transition game, and the ball movement and the speed and everyone trying to get it inside 50, I can see these key forwards kicking a lot of goals this year, and I think it's going to excite the footy fans that have been craving. We might not get 100 yet. We won't get 100 goals yet. But with the extra round of footy and these key forwards, I think we'll see lots and lots of goals from them. Jesse Hogan was brilliant on the weekend. Mackay Curnow we'll touch on. A lot of goals being kicked.
I like it, Joey. It's a good one. Good to see the big boys fire on the weekend. There were some good games from the big key forwards. I'm going to go for the biggest of the big boys from what I took out of the weekend. Big Mason. We know he's dominated the headlines over the past couple of days. And then we find out on the Monday that it's a beat-up. It's an absolute beat up. So what I want us to do from here on in is, can we please exhaust all avenues of footage, so that 3 days after the fact, when a new angle emerges, I'm sick of this. We've got a new angle or new vision. Like we know, Joey, with the broadcast capabilities now, we know how the sausage is made. And a shout out to all the crew that are back of screen that do a wonderful job, particularly those at Fox Footy, that put the game on. But can we please exhaust all of the camera angles before a bloke gets crucified over 3 days and we come out and we find out that it was absolutely nothing? The same for tribunal vision. How does it always leak out 3 or 4 days later that there's another angle or there's another vision? Let's exhaust it all and just be able to deal with the issue properly once rather than do it over 3 days. And Paul Mason got absolutely pilloried.
So you want the full vision for context sake, to get it all
Earlier. Just get it out. If it's a big talking point like that was, well, then get it all out there for us. I'm going to shut my door real quick because some people in the office are just wondering what's happening over here.
I think it was really talking. I tell you what, you're spot on. I think Basil Zemplis agrees with you too, that's probably right. We should be getting the full context, the full picture before everyone piles on. That's not a bad one because I did come in thinking it was overblown. Like, yeah, Mason's Mason. He doesn't help himself, but there wasn't a heap in it and there was some context around it and we can all move on. It was a bit disappointing that that was a big focus off the weekend's footy. Like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, the issue was probably more around Mason's performance on the field. He really had no impact at all, and it brings me to that game, and we're certainly not going to overreact about Collingwood. They'll be fine and for all the other games, but it just showed a little bit of about the tools for Collingwood and their lack of depth. Now they've got some concerns, like Ash Johnson just... We know he's got talent, hasn't quite put it together yet. Mason Cox, you know, he's another year older, and is he going to be able to step up? Not sure. And then down the other end, without Nathan Murphy and Jeremy Howe, of course, they had a youngster in Charlie Dean, but it just showed a little bit of a vulnerability with their tall and key position stocks. As I said, they will be fine. They were probably just slightly underdone. And to be fair, they were coming up against a Giants team that were absolutely humming.
Well, that's it. It was a Giants team that pushed them to the very end last year. So we're not going to – I'm certainly going to focus more on the fact that I think the Giants are glass half full with their performance rather than there's any issue with Collingwood. They still generated a stack of entries. They still applied really good pressure. So I think the bones of Collingwood's game are going to be absolutely fine. And, I mean, the forward 50, it's 1 week. It's essentially the same forward line as last year, with probably an upgrade in Lachie Schultz. So I don't have any real concern with the Pies coming out of that one.
Yeah, we will chat about the other games more after the break, but I think the weekend, if anything, and we're not going to over-exaggerate, we can't emphasise that enough, but it said more about the winners, I think, than it did the losers. So when we talk about Collingwood, Brisbane and Melbourne, for me, I'm still not concerned, but it's more about the winners. And I do want to get into those other games after this, because I want to ask you about Harry Mackay. I know we spoke a lot about him last year and his goal kicking and the yips.
Massive
and,
game.
You know, there was some conversations around there, but he was enormous. We'll touch on the other games as well. We'll get to that after this. If you are listening to Footy Talk and you do have a question for us, get on Instagram at @footytalk_pod or on TikTok at @footytalkpod. We'll be back right after this. This is Footy Talk. If you do want to get involved, make sure you send us a message on Instagram at @footytalk_pod. We're here, as we're going to be every Tuesday, with Nick Riewoldt. Rue, we want to touch on the other big game Friday night. What about the comeback from the Blues? 46 points down. They come back and win. The big story was Harry Mackay kicking the game winner. Before I get your take, I just want to take a listen to him on the Harry and Ben podcast talking about his goal-kicking routine over summer.
Essentially, I got like a little step just before I kick, which I'd always known I had, and I really hated watching myself kick because I knew I had this little step. But
like immediately before you...
Yeah, and so it was really cool. So with the data, you could see like your momentum would build up and then I'd take this little step and all your momentum would drop and right. Then you'd try and chase it again. And I've been doing that since I was basically a kid. So
right.
Over the summer, I've been trying to undo that because really it was, I guess, killing your momentum. So the consistency of your kick was going to be up and down depending on that step a bit. So, yeah, it was really cool. Very tricky to try and unwire something that you've been doing for years and years. But, yeah, definitely made some good progress on that. Talking with Ash a lot and always say, like, it's still going to be some, like, teething issues with it, but you're going to be better tomorrow than you were today with it because you're undoing and you're laying down new kind of patterns in the way you kick. So it's been really exciting to go after something technically, I guess. And, yeah, we're looking at it from, like, the next 10 years. Like, this is going to help over the next 10 years as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, there'll be some transfer straight away, which has been really great, and even at training, but knowing that this is going to be really good for the long term. So, yeah, as I said, a cool part of the job is being able to get better at a skill or something you want to go after. So that's been really exciting. And then another big element of it was just being really clear what spots you're doing what kick from, because I think last year and probably in the last few years, to a degree, probably playing a bit more on like instinct and emotion on if I want to snap the ball from there versus kind of being methodical with that decision, if that makes sense. So
if you were in a spot on the 50 now, have you like categorized each one?
Yeah, I literally got a map kind of thing. So we worked really closely with that, knowing exactly where your spots are. So it takes out any emotion, any fatigue, you just know where you're kicking from, and that takes out any kind of, I guess, stress or emotion or anything from that decision because you already know.
So after listening to that, Rui, and hearing Harry Mackay talk about the work he's done over summer and then to be able to execute under pressure, Are you in the camp of, well done, let's give him his flowers? Or are you in the other school of thought of, well, so he should. He's paid almost $900 million a year. That's what he's paid to do.
Yeah, oh, absolutely well done, Harry, because, I mean, particularly to stand over that ball at the end of the game, given all of the expectation and pressure and history and commentary around his goal kicking. So well done to steel yourself and go back. But I think that is the expectation, Joey. When you're getting paid that sort of money, ultimately you've got to stack it up on the field. So I thought it was a really solid game. I don't think we need to get too carried away with – like, I didn't think it was an overly dominant performance. I thought Charlie Curnow was probably more influential and turned the game. The part that was interesting to me was the commentary from Nick Newman and from Charlie Curnow after the game, all kind of giving it to the media a little bit for the pressure that Harry's been under. I mean, the media's really only been calling it as they see it and based on Harry's performance on the field. So, look, I think you can probably have it a little bit each way here. It's a well done to Harry for steeling himself in the moment, but this can rear its head pretty quickly again too. We know that's been the case from a consistency point of view, so I don't reckon you want to go firing too many bullets the media's way, because that's something you'll never ever win as a player. And we'll learn that lesson as players along the way too.
It is interesting, because if there is criticism going a player's way or a club's way and they get asked about it, they all give the same response. Oh, we don't listen to the outside noise. We don't take any notice of it. We only worry about what's said internally. But then when it goes the other way and they think they can stick it up the media, they'll say, see, hey, now the media can get off their back. So they do listen to it. They do take it on board. But well done to Harry McKay. Let's hope he can continue that form and the Blues can continue that form. Hey, I want to ask you about a lot of noise about pick number one, Harley Reid. He was on the back page of the paper again. This time it was a photo because I think he caught one in the gonads. And the back page was about a low blow for Harley Reid, and he was on his haunches, and then somehow they made a story. He's been on the back and front page more times than I've had breakfast in the last 5 years. You were a pick number one that came in with a lot of hype. Do you think it's fair what Harley Reid is going through? Is this now part and parcel of being pick one, or is this over the top and it's too much for an 18-year-old that hasn't even played a game yet?
It's over the top when you contrast what he's dealing with compared to what Cadman dealt with last year as the number one pick. So, I mean, the contrast and the difference between the two is absolutely staggering with respects to expectation. I think it speaks to the fact that Harley Reid is kind of a man in a boy in a man's body, and he just looks ready to go, doesn't he? So I think a lot of this, how he deals with the expectation from a performance perspective, is going to fall back onto Adam Simpson. I really do, and how he uses Harley Reid. So if he adopts the "we're going to do the best thing for him" mentality, well, then he'll get a stack of midfield minutes, and they'll probably play him a little bit off half back as well. Because we saw with players like Sheasel last year, like, is Sheasel the best player coming into the competition as a young guy last year, or is he afforded the best opportunity for him to work his way into an AFL career off half back and find it 30 times every week? So I think if Harley Reid's going to be playing sort of a bit of a half forward role, pinch hitting in the midfield, he's going to find it really difficult. Because it's harder to find the footy, the noise will come, it'll start to spiral. But if they just let him rip in the midfield, he finds it 20 times each week, the noise won't be there and he'll be away and he'll have a great career. So a lot falls on Adam Simpson's shoulders.
Yeah, and I think there's an element he will play a bit of halfback too, just to, for your exact same point. Just let him get a bit of footy, keep the pressure off and not have too much expectations. Quick thought on opening round. Did you have a view? Do you think it was amazing? Was it worthwhile?
The AFL said it was a roaring success. Well, knock me over with a feather. were they ever going to say anything else?
Exactly.
But in terms of achieving the desired result, did it really sink its teeth into that New South Wales market? I mean, they were there anyway, so the games were great. I think the impact that will have probably on the Giants and their supporter base will be the most lasting, which is great, because we know that's probably the toughest market of all. So great game of footy that they would have been pumped without the AFL.
The question is the impact that it would have had for those northern states. How much did it really resonate with them and help grow the football community up there? compared to the compromise it's having on the competition. So Chris Scott last night in AFL 360 was really strong. He's saying it's so compromised. Just say it, because now, and he was right, some teams have now got two byes throughout the AFL season and some have only got one bye. Now, we know how important a bye is and getting a freshen up a couple of times throughout a year. So that's probably the question that a lot of footy fans are asking is the compromise to the competition, the compromise to the footy fans in Melbourne, the integrity of it worth the buy-in and the traction that they're trying to get in the Northern States? It's a hard one to answer, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a hard one to answer. I don't think we'll be doing it next year. I don't think it's something that will become commonplace, but there's compromise everywhere. I mean, there's only a handful of teams that get to play West Coast twice this year, who everyone expects to be on the bottom. So, you know, we can find compromise everywhere we want to look for it.
And the last point too, just on a sad note, some of the severe injuries to happen out of opening round. So our thoughts are with Sam Doherty, who's had a wretched run, one of the great guys in the AFL. Kadeen Coleman, who was about to be a huge breakout player for Brisbane and a massive part of their premiership to it with an ACL injury. Even Callum Ward coming up to 300 games, not far away, going to miss 8 weeks with a shoulder injury. It's a downside of footy. You had a severe injury early in a season in 2010. How's that like for a player when you've done all the preseason, you're raring to go, you're in a team that's a contender like Sam Doherty is, and all of a sudden you're going to miss, well, he's going to miss the whole season of footy.
Yeah, so not too dissimilar. I mean, I guess with an ACL, you know you're done. I had a bad hammy, so I didn't know whether I'd make it back or not. But I think that the point that you made around your team being in contention, that's the one when it just really stings. Because
especially when you've been in a team that have been ordinary for a long time.
You're a leader. You've been in a team that struggled. You've just had a taste. You know what it feels like now. So the Doherty one, when you pile it on to all of the other issues that he's and challenges that he's faced and overcome, I hope that this is another hurdle that he's able to clear and find his way back in. Tough at 32. So thinking of him and then Coleman, yeah, I mean, it's a bad one for him, but it's a shocker for Brisbane because, you know, we know how impactful he was towards the end of the back end of last year and how, you know, they'd really groomed him for that quarterback role with Daniel Rich moving out of the side. So, yeah, it's a couple of big ones to go down.
Yeah, well said. Hey, quickly too, shout out to Damien Hardwick and the Gold Coast Suns. Matt Rowell, one hell of a game. We know he's got that in him. 20 clearances. He was phenomenal. Really positive start for the Suns and life under Dimmer. Hey, I know we've got to get going. I know you've got to get off. You're travelling again. Where are you going? Pebble Beach tomorrow. Are you saying it's work?
Yeah, a bit of work. Joey.
Bit of work, bit of pleasure. Anyway, all right, we'll let you go. Hey, hope you enjoyed today's edition of Footy Talk. If you are listening on Spotify, please hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. Nathan Jones, the former Melbourne skipper, joins Abby Holmes and Jack Heverin to take a look from a player's point of view. Until then, enjoy your day. See you, Root.
See you, Joey.
Listener.